General Assembly, called GA, is the annual gathering of Unitarian Universalists in the United States. In addition to worship, workshops, and justice work, we gather to conduct the business of the UUA, the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations, in sessions called plenary. This year, GA was held in New Orleans, and our congregation was represented by Dennis Brown, Sally Brown, and Victoria Cagle, who served as delegates from Chalice to vote on UUA business. It's also possible to attend GA online, and so I attended as an online delegate and participated that way, which I'm also able to vote online. So we thought we'd start sharing reflections by sharing with you why we love General Assembly.
In late June, I spent 4 days immersed in UUism on the large scale. There is nothing like singing Spirit of Life, Blue Boat Home, and other UU hymns with a couple of thousand other people from all over the US, worshiping together. While the format is that of a professional conference, the sense of connection is entirely different. There were workshops, plenary sessions, worship services, exploring booths in the exhibit halls, and catching up with friends from other congregations. In fact, the first face I saw on walking in was that of Mary Pomeran, a Chalice founding member who now lives in Arizona. I have been to General Assembly 3 times before, in 1976 in Claremont, California, in 1992 in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and in 2004 in Long Beach, California, so I had some sense of what to expect. This GA was a more emotional, spiritual event than those I have attended in the past. This was partially due to my present emotional state, but it's also due to the fact that UUism is shifting focus to encompass more emotional experiences. The music break every hour or so, imagine that, a music break rather than a stretch break, during the plenary sessions, and the music throughout the worship services added to this sense. I found the entire experience deeply moving and grounding. I am a member of Chalice and a member of the larger UU community.
Hi. Dennis and I, as Victoria said, love GA because of the 4,000 kindred spirits singing those wonderful hymns, living our principles all in one place and ready to continue the work of what we hold dear in our principles. Now, we had been members, Dennis and I, of a UU community in Lexington, Massachusetts for over 20 years. But when Boston GA came, we went, and that was 2003. It took us 20 years to get to one. GA has visited Portland, Long Beach, so somewhere we crossed paths with Victoria back in 2004, and St. Louis, Charlotte, Salt Lake City. Not exactly those dream places you want to go to, but New Orleans was the draw this year especially. Families, youth are all welcome. And it gives us an opportunity to visit those other parts of the country. And because it is expensive, we make it a vacation. Also, there are volunteer opportunities, too, if you are so inclined.
So I joined a Unitarian Universalist congregation for the first time in late 2004. Less than 3 years later, I attended my first General Assembly. I was strongly encouraged by friends, and a group of us went, held that year in Portland, Oregon. I do not think it's a coincidence that by the close of that year, I had decided to attend seminary. General Assembly is where I first felt myself part of something so much bigger than just my church and just my circle of friends. Since then, I've attended GA in person 4 more times. It's an exhausting gathering. I can tell you, even attending virtually, attending online is exhausting. There's so much to see and watch. So I don't attend every year, and it's become easier and easier to participate online. I didn't attend in person this year, attended via the internet, but I did vote for the first time for a UUA president, which was exciting, and my candidate won, so that was exciting. Attending GA is expensive and time-consuming, but it's an experience I wish all of us could have at least once. And so now each of us has some personal reflections to share. You have a handout in your order of service that has a graphic about white supremacy on one side and a list of links on the other side. So these relate to the things we're going to be sharing about. And I've also posted those links and more links on our website. They're posted already on the Chalice blog.
Good morning. Excuse me. I love going to GA, I must admit. We've been to, I think Sal and I have been to 8 GAs, and I always come back, you know, filled with a more deeper commitment to the faith that I really love. And one of the reasons that's really interesting is for a few days each year, within a half a mile or so from the convention center, where GA is held, in the restaurants, in the hotels, and on the streets, who do you think is in the majority? We are, which is a rare thing to experience. So it's a wonderful bubble to live in, and even for such a short time. But let's switch gears. At this year's GA, there were some difficult truths to face. We have not lived fully into the faith, or the promise of our faith. We believe in the worth and dignity of every person. We believe in justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Earlier this year, Christina Rivera, a woman of color, was not hired for a senior UUA executive position, even though she was qualified. Instead, a white man was selected. She was not selected, she was told, because she was not a good fit. To her credit, she shared what she had been told, and she and other UUs of color recognized that this was the coded language of white supremacy at work. Unconscious, sure. Unintended, no doubt. But white supremacy, nevertheless. Yes, we have not lived fully into the promise of our faith. A controversy developed around this issue that led directly this past April to the resignation of our president, Reverend Peter Morales, and 2 senior executives at the UUA, truly unprecedented in our history. Our moderator then, Jim Keyes, and the UUA board, to their credit, recognized that we were in crisis, a serious crisis, and we needed a skilled leader to assume the presidency, whose charge would be to initiate the difficult work to address this issue, to set the table so our new president can be successful and to hold each of us in love through this difficult time. They got creative. They didn't call just one, but they called 3 prominent leaders in our faith, all black, to be co-presidents, including the Reverend Bill Sinkford, the former UUA president, Reverend Sophia Betancourt, an assistant professor of theology at Starr King, and Professor Emeritus from Georgia Southern University, Leon Spencer. They spoke at length at this year's GA and agreed that what had happened to Christina Rivera was overt white supremacy at work. The definition they used was offered by a new and amazing organization in our faith, Black Lives UU Collective, which Reverend Sharon, I know, shared in an earlier service this past May. And here it is. White supremacy is a set of institutional assumptions and practices, often operating unconsciously, that tend to benefit white people and exclude people of color. The 3 co-presidents announced the creation of a commission on institutional change that will do an audit of the UUA processes and procedures to try and root out overt white supremacy. This work will be carried out under the new president. But here is the important part. The three co-presidents and the Black Lives UU Collective have called on you and me and all our congregations to recognize that this is not work only for the UUA staff and management, but for us as well. Each congregation should examine itself to determine if overt white supremacy is present. Do we, the Chalice UU congregation, have work to do? Before I approach that question, I think it is constructive to examine our faith's history with white supremacy. The founding minister of our previous church, Charles Fallon, this is back in Lexington, Massachusetts, was a prominent abolitionist in the early 1800s. When he died tragically in 1840, no Unitarian church in Boston would host his memorial. It was too controversial. Abolitionists were considered extremist and not part of the mainstream or of our faith. Many Unitarians had businesses that were directly involved in the slave trade. John C. Calhoun, our seventh vice president, and one of the founders of the All Souls UU Church in Washington, D.C., was an openly sympathetic to the South and owned slaves himself. But by 1965, things had changed. For when the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. called for clergy to come to Selma following Bloody Sunday, two-thirds of our ministers heeded the call and went. But at the same time, it is my understanding that it would have been very difficult for a Black UU minister to be called to a New England church. And then we, within our own faith, had the difficulties of the Black Empowerment Movement in 1969 that led to open wounds that are still yet to be fully healed. I think clearly we have over the past 200 years chipped away at the terrible practices of overt white supremacy and have left those practices far behind. But when it comes to covert white supremacy, although we have made progress, I don't think it should be surprising that there is still work left to do, even here at Chalice. So I think we should heed the call and join the important work and make a contribution so that someday the promise of our faith can be fully realized. Thank you.
We're hearing so much about overt white supremacy right now. You have an illustration in your handout for today that shows the difference between overt and covert white supremacy, what's visible and what's invisible. I mean, there are literally Nazis marching in the streets. So it may sound absurd to some of us to talk about white supremacy in Unitarian Universalism. But look at those covert practices if you have reading glasses. But we're just one human family, expecting people of color to teach white people, denial of racism, self-appointed allies. That sounds like Unitarian Universalists. 1% of Unitarian Universalists are African American, compared to 12% of the general population. UUs have often lamented this underrepresentation in our denomination and wondered why this is. Well, Black Unitarian Universalists are telling us we have work to do. And the first step is to understand some of our UU history. You heard Dennis mention the Black empowerment controversy briefly, and you can and should read much more about this because it's complicated. But the briefest version I can give you is that in 1967, Black Unitarian Universalists formed the Black Unitarian Universalist Caucus to provide support to Black UUs. The congregations of the UUA at a General Assembly voted to give $1 million over 4 years to support the Black Unitarian Universalist Caucus. But that vote of the congregations had no binding authority on the UUA. Subsequently, the UUA board did not approve that funding. So that was the beginning of over 10 years of struggle and controversy around the existence of and funding for Black caucus groups in our movement. It is estimated that over 1,000 African Americans left Unitarian Universalism at this time. So remember, our history is that Unitarian Universalists paid lip service to civil rights while failing to support African Americans in our own movement. That is why it is a very big deal now that the Black Lives of UU group has formed and that the UUA board has voted to provide substantial financial support, hoping to contribute $5.3 million to that organization. Many of us see this as our chance to help right the wrongs of 50 years ago. One of the prominent Black UU leaders in the 1960s was a man named Hayward Henry, who left Unitarian Universalism because of our failure to support the caucus groups. Now known as Dr. Mtangulizi Sanyika, he spoke at this year's General Assembly, and he sits on the Elder Council to the Black Lives of UU Collective. You can listen to his talk online. That's one of the links I've posted to the website. So I hope you will take the time to watch it. There's also about an hour and 20 minute documentary about the Black empowerment controversy with a lot of the people from that time period sharing their memories. It's fully available on YouTube. That link is also on our website. And I hope some of you will take the time to watch that as well. It's very informative and important for us to know that piece of our denominational history.
New Orleans, 2017, GA. New Orleans, a very uniquely American city, birthplace of jazz, southern cooking, beautiful architecture. With its history of French and Spanish and British colonialism, opportunists, pirates, privateers, plantations, and slavery. That was America's original sin. And if you stay tuned later for the Hamilton sing-along, you'll know why. Over 12 million Africans were brought to the New World as slaves. 400,000 were brought to the U.S. We visited the Whitney Plantation, 20 miles outside of New Orleans. Most southern plantations devote themselves and show off the wealthy lifestyles of their rich, their owners. The Whitney Plantation is dedicated solely to the lives of the slaves. They cared, sweated, and labored for their owners, but also they had to make their own clothes and grow their own food. And they, or their children, at any time, could be bought and sold. But back to GA. GA's plenary sessions, the delegate, Victoria Dennis and I faithfully attend, usually have lively discussions that would steer congregations to social action. We also heard thoughtful non-UU speakers at the WARE lectures on Saturday nights. Corinne Armstrong, Mary Oliver, Holly Neer, Julian Bond, and this year Brian Stevenson, who is the founder of the Equal Justice Initiative to end mass incarceration. Sorry, mouth is dry here. So singers and poets, philosophers and activists in their own way share their thoughts on our human condition and how we can rise above it. So the workshops usually center around organizing and activism. I attended the UUs in the military, and there are UUs in the military, all serving as well as chaplains. There is workshops on environmental justice, addressing the refugee crisis, ideas for RE, and people sharing their own personal stories. In 2005, we saw what Hurricane Katrina exposed to the world almost 12 years ago now. We saw the racist sheriff in Gretna with loaded guns deny safety to people fleeing those floods. We saw people in the Superdome overcrowded, overheated, and with no water. And we saw the president fly over, never addressing those left behind. New Orleans reminds us of how far we have come and how much more we have to do. The resignation of Peter Morales, the hurt of black UUs who left 50 years ago, such a coincidental convergence opens up this opportunity. We hope that the Black Lives UU, the UUA, and the rest of us are willing to face our own history and do the work of reconciliation. This country needs to do the same. As a person of color, I support the Black Lives UU.
Props. Well, the others have been talking about some of the heavy stuff. I'll talk about a little lighter things. I did want to add one more thing about the plenary sessions. One bright spot in a dark cloud. During its report, Beacon Press, which is a UU publishing house, reported that as a side effect of the latest political messes, it is doing a booming business. Yay. So earlier I mentioned the exhibit hall. The exhibit hall was filled with fun booths. All of the different UU groups were out in force. The UU Humanists, the UU Christians, the Center for Ethical Living and Social Justice Renewal, the UU Trauma Response Ministry, Navigators USA, Scouting for All, it's for you, Ralph, along with several theological schools and nearly everything else you could imagine UUs might be interested in. Whole two columns here. And there were exhibitors selling cool stuff. Chalice Works, Bikey Girl Bloomers, and the Massachusetts Bible Society. I brought back a study guide for Bible study, a book on church, how to run a church auction, a book on UU here's a book on UU history, among others. And unfortunately, only one pair of chalice earrings. Not the two pair I had planned on buying. The worship services, they were wonderful. I don't have the words to explain how it feels to worship with thousands of UUs. Perhaps like the very best Chalice Sunday service, only larger and more so. Singing together, listening to inspiring sermons, feeling thrilled for those who have followed through on their call to ministry and were honored for reaching preliminary or final fellowship, and again, the wonderful music. And there were workshops. Sally mentioned a few she attended. I also attended a wide variety. Three of them were White Fragility, Awakening Innovation in Faith Formation Practices, and The Power of Pastoral Song, UU Compassionate Choirs. I will say that while the lecturer on White Fragility was very earnest, and everyone else seemed to be hanging on to every word, I never did quite figure out what she was talking about. She forgot to define her terms. In the workshop on faith formation practices, there was a description of an activity called pilgrimages. These are events open to all ages. The group takes a day to visit a few sites of spiritual significance in the community in which the congregation is located. These would be cemeteries, historic sites, churches, markets, etc. At each site, There's an opportunity to learn and to experience prayer. The point of a pilgrimage is to become more compassionate and connect better with the place, the community, the physical community, in which the congregation is located. It was pointed out that spiritual experiences generally occur that when one is alone and away from church, or together at church. The pilgrimage program at the Presenter's Congregation is an attempt to bridge that distance between those two types of experiences. And it seems to me that something like this might be of interest to Chalice members. Let me know if this intrigues you, and maybe we can just make that happen. The last workshop I went to was also the most powerful for me. UU Compassionate Choirs. A compassionate choir is a group that gathers to sing for the ill or elderly. The three presenters had rather different programs with different levels of staff involvement, different audiences, and different levels of participant involvement required. But all the groups included regular rehearsals during which participants attended to self-nurturance and singing together. Singing to provide comfort is different than performing. Music is a way to reach those who are isolated due to their illness or circumstances. The repertoire consists of fairly simple tunes and generally familiar ones. During the workshop, we sang several. The leaders pointed out that the part of the brain that creates and processes music still works well even for those with dementia who have lost the ability to speak. One of the presenters described visiting a woman with severe dementia who still remembered all the words to Spirit of Life because it was music. I would love to see such a program at Chalice. And if I've piqued the interest of anybody with musical skills, come talk to me. I brought back a lot of information. And finally, I think I'll make it to another GA a little sooner than 12 years from now. After all, I do have some more earrings to buy.
Victoria is not exaggerating the exhibit hall. That's where I buy my stoles. It's also a sign of how rich this year's GA was that we probably haven't properly emphasized how momentous it is that we finally have a woman president of the UUA. So to be clear about the timeline, Reverend Peter Morales resigned in, I think, April, and we already knew we had an election coming, so he resigned with just a couple of months left. The three co-presidents were appointed by the board for those interim several months, so our first woman president of the UUA was Sophia Betancourt, one of the three co-presidents, and then Reverend Susan Frederick Gray is our first elected woman president of the UUA. So we should celebrate that. All of the candidates were women, so we we were ready for a woman president of the UUA. So General Assembly is held each year in June. In 2018, it will be in Kansas City, Missouri. In 2019, it will be in our time zone in Spokane, Washington. So I hope you will consider going. I try to go when it's in our time zone, so I'm looking at 2019. A song we often sing was originally written as Standing on the Side of Love. We know that campaign. We have those shirts. I have a stole. Written by Unitarian Universalist minister and composer Jason Shelton. After discussion that began at last year's GA around the ableist language of standing, Jason has changed the words of the song to answering the call of love and has asked that we sing it that way from now on. So please follow the lyrics as projected, not the ones in your teal hymnal. That's the only change to the lyrics, answering the call of love instead of standing on the side of love. As you rise in body or spirit.